my boy with me today. He's my travel partner. He's 9 years old. It was his birthday, and we bought him a new hunting dog, so we had to come to South Dakota to find a good dog. And that's why we got to leave, is I'm headed to Vegas in the morning, so I got to get back in time so I can go to the rodeo. So I will be here at the break if anybody has any questions. What I want to talk for a few minutes about is nutrition. The title says energy and protein, and I think I'm, at the end I'm going to break it out a little bit and talk a little bit about specifics, but I think when you're talking applied nutrition, it's global nutrition. We need to be feeding them globally enough energy and protein, and it's really hard to separate out the two. I think we always, as a nutritionist, you always get asked, what's more important, energy or protein? Well, you can't really separate it that way, because without the protein, they're not going to utilize the energy. So from a simplistic standpoint, I'll tell you that energy makes up 70-80% of the diet. Protein makes up 10-15%, and so I'm going to tell you energy is probably more important. But it doesn't work that way, okay? So I like this quote here. Reproduction is the single most important factor associated with the economic success of a cow-calf producer. And I'm sure somebody's probably already said that at this meeting. And I think without a doubt it's true. I mean, simply put, more calves on the ground is going to be bigger payday for a cow-calf producer. Even if they're a little bit smaller calf, that's better than no calf at all. Now, I, like Julie, I'm a nutritionist, so this quote kind of pains me, but I'm going to explain to you. I feel like the token nutritionist put on the program here with all the repro guys. But I'm going to spend the next few minutes explaining to you why nutrition is the most important thing in order for you to get your cows bred. As we look at this management cycle, the point I wanted to make on this slide is we want to have a calf every 365 days, not necessarily just once every calendar year. We want it to be 365 days. If we start slipping on that, if our postpartum interval gets too long, if we don't get them bred until we're out there at 90 days or so, we're going to start backing those cows up every year. And in a minute, I'm going to show you a slide what will happen. But that roughly gives us about 83 days for us to have a calf, for her to go through her uterine involution, to get back in shape, all of those sorts of things, and to be bred. We got 83 days. So it's really not that much time when you think about it. So I'm sure you guys learned a lot about the postpartum interval already in this symposium. There's a lot of things that affect it. But I'm going to show you here that nutrition is probably the number one factor that will affect the length or the variation in that postpartum interval. I think this is an interesting slide. What this is showing us, if you look at there's two data sets here. This one has over 2,000 cows in it, so it's pretty good numbers. And on our axis here, this is percent of cows that haven't started cycling yet. And that ranged in a herd anywhere from 8 to 70%. Okay, and this is out at 70 days postpartum. So we spend an awful lot of time on reproductive management, hiring a good technician or learning how to breed, buying semen, synchronization protocols, all those different things. But if they're not cycling, it doesn't matter how good you can breed a cow, they're not going to breed, right? Now, we can bump them up with cedars and stuff like that, certainly. But if we got 70% of our cows that aren't cycling by day 70, we're in a lot of trouble, okay? And I guess I would say the range, if I backed up a slide, you know, why is there such a big range in there? Why does it range from 8 to 70%? It's going to be nutrition. The cows that were in the 70% of them that aren't cycling, we're going to be in poor condition, okay? So as I said a minute ago, when we talk about cows that are backed up every year, you know, it's not that hard to develop a heifer and get her bred. It's not that hard to breed mature cows. The cows where we struggle breeding are the 2 and 3 year olds, right? They're the ones that tend to fall out of the herd. They're still growing. They got big energy requirements. They're lactating for the first time. Well, what happens when we get out there 4 or 5 years? It seems like every year we get cows that are 4, 5, 6 when they ought to be at their production peak and they fall out of the herd. Why? What's wrong with her? Well, nothing's wrong with her. I think if we kept better records, if we could track that cow, I think this graph explains it. What this graph is saying is that the later she calves in the calving season, the greater percentage or likelihood she has of falling out the next year, simply because she doesn't have enough time to get bred. So if she's backed up 10, 15 days every year, we're missing that 83-day point. We get out there 4 or 5 years. She's not going to start cycling by the time you pull bulls if you've got any kind of defined breeding season. So it's really important that we got these cows in good shape, that we can bunch up that calving season, and have them cycling by the beginning of the breeding season. So as I said, this one maybe is reiterating a little bit. Nutrition is the number one factor that's going to affect the postpartum interval, allow her to start cycling. So I want to talk for a minute about body condition score and basically global nutrition and the effects that that has on a cow. So our recommendations for mature cows, we want them to be in a condition score 5 to 5.5. For a two-year-old cow, we want them a little bit fleshier. Like I said, she's got a lot of nutrient requirements going on there. So we're going to push her up towards a 6. Now, why do we talk about body condition score? Body condition score is a practical indicator of nutritional status. It really doesn't tell me anything about how you're feeding a cow today, but what it does do is it gives me a kind of a window in time, how you've been feeding that cow the last 30, 45, 60 days, what kind of plan of nutrition she's been on typically, and that's going to define how well she does in the breeding season. So, and the one thing I want to point out is that when we talk about body condition score in breeding, we're always talking about condition score at calving. And I'm going to show you a slide in a minute why. But we need them to be the condition score, like I said, a 5.5 to 6. We need them to be at that condition score by the time they calve. Not necessarily by the time we breed, but it's got to be by the time we calve because it's hard to pick them up. So typically, we want our cows in a 4, 5, or 6. Mature cows, you know, in Wyoming, we run on a lot of rangeland. I'm from Nevada originally. Even more rangy, if you want to say. You know, we typically run cows in a 4, and they do pretty well. I think they can be adapted to their environment. But we need those young cows to be in a 5 and a 6. You know, we typically don't see a lot on this fleshy end. I notice there's a lot more grass in South Dakota than we've got in Wyoming. So maybe your cows are a little bit fleshier, but typically speaking, we want them in the 5 to 6 range. Here's just kind of some brief examples. Body condition score 3 cows, if you see up here on the top one, I mean, she's thin. When you look at her, she's thin. You can see her ribs. You got to be able to look through the hair on these cows, but she looks kind of like a dairy cow. She's got those hips sticking out there. She's real thin between the hooks and the pins. She just doesn't have much to her. You look at the 5, and she looks real good. She's squared off more like a beef cow. She's carrying more in the brisket and up front. She's filled in the back. So she just looks good. And when we get to an 8, is again, we don't really see these all that often in our country. But she's just filled in. When she's so fat that it's impeding her movement, that's a 7 and an 8. Okay? If any of you guys feed cattle in here, here's kind of a good rule of thumb. So this is body fat reserves on a beef cow related to body condition score. So what percentage of fat does she have in her body? When we look at a condition score 7 cow, she's going to have right about 27% body fat. That's about the same fat that we need if a steer has the genetic capability to marble, and we consider it finished, say at 4 to 5 tenths of back fat, that's what it's got, is 27 to 28% fat. So that cow that's in a body condition score 7 is going to look kind of like a finished steer. So kind of a good rule of thumb there on how fat they look. So why, again, when I talk about body condition score calving, the reason we need them to be there at calving, it's hard to put on weight gain after calving. Okay, it's especially true in thin cows. And I'm going to get to a slide, I think it's next. But here's the relationship between body condition score and postpartum interval. We see, remember, I told you 83 days was that magic number to maintain our yearly calving interval. We look at this condition score, cows that are in a 3, they're not even cycling to almost day 90. Okay, so again, really hard to get her bred before she's cycling. We get to day 5 and 6, and we can see we can back that up into the 60-50 day range. Typically between day 50 and 60 is when a beef cow that's in good condition and everything's going right with her, she'll start cycling about day 50 or 60. So that's what we're shooting for. And we can see the relationship here on the right hand side with the graph to pregnancy is directly related. The condition score 4 or less, we're getting really bad conception rates. We get up into 5 and 6, and we're getting up into that 85-90% where we consider it acceptable. It goes beyond just conception rate. And I think one of the cool things, and I'm not even going to touch on it, but Rick Funston's going to be talking about fetal programming in a little bit. When we're feeding those cows and they're pregnant, we can affect the calf that's in utero. And this just kind of just brushes the surface of that. We can see the condition score cows right here, percent pregnancy, which matches up perfectly with the slide I showed you before that. Calving date, I've been talking about this. These guys' interval to calving is increased. But look at the calf average daily gain. So between a 3 and a 5 or 6, that's over 2/10. Over 200 days, that's 40 pounds. Today's calf market, that's 60, 70 bucks. So that's a big difference in cost right there. Now, we would probably say that might be due to milk production, right? We typically associate milk production with the largest factor that's going to affect weaning weight or growth of the calf. Excuse me. And I think to a large degree that's true, but I think some of the work that we're seeing out of Nebraska and Rick's going to talk about, it's not just milk production, it's the potential of that calf that we're affecting while we're feeding the cow in utero. So there's more reasons to feed them to be a good body condition score than just her immediate performance. It's going to be the lifetime of that calf. So one of the reasons it's so difficult, this graph, one of the reasons it's so difficult for cows to gain weight is because of their nutritional requirements, okay? If we look at this graph, now it's set up for March, but really that's irrelevant. Peak milk production in a cow is about day 60. When are we trying to get cows bred? About day 60, right? So Mother Nature's working against us a little bit from a requirement standpoint and keeping that tight calving interval. This is why it's so extremely important to have her in good condition by the time she calves, okay? Because it's really hard to put on weight. And that's what this graph shows you. When I graduated from Wyoming, I was on faculty at Purdue for a few years, and Ron Lemonager and I kind of put these slides together from some old data. And I think they're pretty neat slides. And I think what they show you is this top one. If we have a cow that's in a condition score of 5 at weaning, and we want her to be a 5 at calving, okay, she's not changing any condition herself, but she's still got to gain about 100 pounds of calf weight, fluid weight from that growing fetus, right? That energy's got to come from somewhere, so we got to be feeding for that energy. So we're going to be gaining about 100 pounds, and so if it's about 120 days till we calve, that's almost a pound a day she needs to gain going across the scale, and she never changed condition. Okay, look at some of these lower ones. Look at if she's in a condition score 3 at weaning. We've got 180 days to calving, we're still a pound. But you get up here, and we're 150 days, 120 days, we're well over 2 pounds a day she needs to gain. That's a lot. Okay, that's a lot through the winter. That's a lot of feed. But let's move to the next slide. Let's look at the same scenario, but this one is if she was in a bad condition score at calving, and this is what we want her to be by breeding. Now, think back to peak milk production and all that sort of thing, and we're asking her to gain 2 to 3 pounds a day. I don't think it's possible. Even if it was, it's certainly not economical with feed prices. So it's really important to keep those cows in condition by the time they calve and not necessarily by the time we want to breed them. Now, there is a lot to be said. We want them on an increase in plain and nutrition, and I don't disagree with that. But I think overall, we need to have them in the condition score we want them by the time they calve. If we look at the nutrient requirements that change associated with early gestation to lactation, from mid-gestation to late gestation, that's about a 25% increase. And this is just in energy. This is a net energy maintenance here requirements, about a 25%. If we look at from mid-gestation to early lactation, that's almost an 80% increase in her dietary energy requirements. So that's a huge jump. If we look at protein, it's exactly the same story. From mid to late gestation, about a 25% increase. From mid-gestation to early lactation, it's about a 95% increase. We like to say the 7-11 rule, 7-9-11. So a cow that's in, early to mid-gestation, her protein requirements are probably somewhere around a 6 or a 7, okay? When she's dry, she really hasn't started having those demands of the fetal growth. Late gestation, her nutrient requirements are probably a 9 or a 10. Early lactation, they're in the 11 to 12 range. So 7, 9, 11 is kind of the way I remember that. So it's really important to keep up on those crude protein requirements. So I like to use body condition score. I think of it as a wake-up call, right? We don't want to be caught with that thin cow right before calving and we can't get her up because that sleeping bear that's going to wake up is our poor conception rates that we're going to get. So I'd be remiss if I didn't talk for a second about milk production, total productive potential of a cow and how that relates to nutritional energy requirements. There's a lot of data out there to show us that cows that produce more, bigger cows that produce more milk, that produce bigger calves, have a higher maintenance requirement. Okay? There's no debating that. Now, I'm not talking about efficiency, and I'm not talking about profitability, because I think that's two totally separate deals. Again, I grew up in Nevada, live in Wyoming. We talk a lot about cow size. It's a big concern with people. But one of the misconceptions is that cow size is directly related to efficiency, and it's not. I'm a big proponent of maximizing the size that your environment allows. But we've got to feed them. You've got to have the feed resources to do that. So if we got low-producing cows, what this graph is really telling us is that lower-producing cows are going to lose less weight when she's grazing. Okay, maybe that seems kind of obvious. Higher-producing cows are going to lose more weight, more body condition score. But back to what I just said, it's okay to have this really high-producing cow. In the right environment, she's actually more efficient and more profitable. But you better have the feed resources to feed her. Otherwise, she's not going to start cycling. She's going to lose body condition score, and she's going to be open. So then she's not very productive or very efficient. So it's totally dependent upon environment. So let me talk just for a few minutes on how am I doing on time? Where's Julie? 10? Let me talk for a few minutes about energy and protein specifically, okay? As I said, one of the hardest things to do is to break it out. Because almost, and I think I got a slide here in a minute. In fact, the one right in front of me. Look at that. Most cases of protein, mineral, and vitamin energy deficiencies are confounded with energy. Okay? It's really hard to break it out. It's really hard to separate it. From an experimental design standpoint, we try to do that. And we can start making some conclusions. But from an applied feeding cows every day standpoint, it is really hard to define, are they energy or protein deficient, especially vitamins. And we're going to have Cody talking to us in a minute. Vitamins and minerals is extremely difficult. So you want to talk about global nutrition. But let's talk about energy for a second. Sub-maintenance energy. Okay, so in heifers, we're going to have delayed onset of puberty. So if we're feeding, in other words, below maintenance requirements of energy for a long period of time, it's going to delay the onset of puberty. We're going to have longer postpartum intervals in our cows. And our environmental anestrous stimulations are going to increase that effect. So whether that's seasonal, whether it's suckling effect, that difference is going to be greater when they're deficient in energy. Okay, there's been a lot of studies that have looked at energy. Generally speaking, in a cow diet, when we're talking energy, we're talking carbohydrates, right? So as long as our crude protein and energies are met, it doesn't matter what type of energy we're feeding. On this example, I got forage, corn silage, corn gluten feed, soy hulls, wheat mids, or cotton. Corn silage, probably what that one was. It doesn't matter where the source of energy is coming from, as long as we're meeting those requirements. Now, when we talk about fat, it's a little bit different. Okay, we get a little bit different response with fat. Fats are needed by all animals, okay? And you'll see a lot of stuff promoting fat supplementation. And I worked for a guy doing my PhD that's probably done as much fat work as anybody. And so I have a pretty good background in fat supplementation. And I can conclusively tell you that I think there might be an effect. I'm not certain. But I think it happens in specific cases, specific times. But generally speaking, okay, most fatty acids are synthesized within our bodies, as long as you got the precursors necessary. But there's a few essential ones, and this is the same in human nutrition as well. And linoleic acid is one of the most important essential fatty acids that we've got. Okay, so generally speaking, in a cow diet, if we're feeding mostly a forage-based diet, we're going to be feeding about 2% of the fat in the diet. Because plants have fat in them, cell wall materials, those sorts of things, right? Well, we can add fat to the diet, but we can only add it to about 5 to 8%. And I would probably say 5 is as high as we want to go of added fat. So what happens if we add too much fat is we will start to decrease her digestive ability on the forages. So the available energy that's there will start to go down because it decreases digestibility. So fat supplementation is a little bit tricky. In mature cows, it's very sporadic. We don't really see a lot of effect. Probably the biggest benefit is that fat is so energy dense, and we can increase the energy of the diet, not necessarily a specific fat effect. And again, back to why is it so confounding to find a fat effect? Is it because we produced more energy in the diet, or is it because of the individual fatty acid? It's very difficult. But we generally see an increase. The biggest response we'll see is in heifers, and I'm pretty sure that's my next slide. Heifers is probably where we've seen the most effect, and I think it's because they're growing, they're more sensitive to different nutritional stimuluses. So we'll tend to see a different effect. We've seen responses, increase in AI percentage rate to fat feeding. It depends on the exposure and the amount and the kind and the type of fatty acid that we're feeding. Okay, we've seen probably the best response to high fat diets increased in thin first calf heifers. We tend to see them pick them up, and again, I can't tell you that is a fat effect, or maybe it's just increased energy effect. But there is a lot of evidence to suggest that in heifers and first calf heifers, that specifically fat itself will actually increase reproductive performance. So let's talk for a minute about protein, okay? Inadequate protein intake can result in reduced pregnancy rates in cows, assuming that we've got equal amounts of protein, okay? That's a pretty good statement, but again, it's inconclusive. The problem with protein supplementation is if I don't do it, they're deficient in energy. So then is the response that I'm seeing due to lack of energy or lack of protein? And so, not to try to make it complicated, but I want you to understand why it's so difficult to analyze whether it's a protein or a energy effect. Probably the best thing is to globally keep them, meet the requirements. Protein and reproduction, on an equal energy basis, when we've had protein deficiency, you can see variations in the literature, and that's what this sign means. Maybe it's up, maybe it's down. It's not consistent. On calving difficulty, uterus involution. First ovarian follicle, we have seen some pretty significant increases in postpartum interval due to crude protein deficiency. Decrease in the number of females showing estrus, and a decrease in first service and overall conception rate. Now, one of the tricks with protein is that not all proteins made equal. Okay, so just kind of a brief review. This is our rumen right here, this big green deal in the middle. So we got crude protein coming in, and it really can be broke down into two directions. We got UIP, which is undegradable intake protein. Okay, so there's a certain amount of protein that comes in that the rumen can't break down, and that's going to go on to their simple stomach, like monogastrics, like you and I have. Or we've got degradable intake protein. Now, the whole job of a rumen microbug, now there's all different classes and they all do different things, but generally speaking, their whole function in life is to break down energy and protein and build protein. That's how they survive. Okay? So the degradable intake protein breaks down, so when we break down an amino acid, which is what protein is, we get ammonia. We break down the energy for the carbohydrate backbone, and we build protein. So MCP is microbial crude protein, okay? So now, when it goes to the small intestines, we got what we call metabolizable protein. This is the amount of protein that's either from bugs or from bypass protein. And that's what the animal has for availability, okay? So now there's a whole school of thought that we need to be basically formulating our rations for MP rather than crude protein, okay? It gets a little bit more complicated. So what we've seen, okay, protein supplementation in general increases forage intake and digestibility. We know that, okay? Increases reproductive performance. After we've met our DIP requirement, added UIP, which is bypass protein, has reduced postpartum interval and weight loss. It's also increased conception rates, okay? But again, like I told you with the fat supplementation, I can find you just as much data that shows no difference as I can that there is a difference. So it's very dependent upon environment, type of cow, cow age, those sorts of things. So my general recommendation is that we feed quality protein sources and meet our crude protein and energy requirements, okay? Again, balancing for metabolizable protein versus crude protein. We're getting a bump in first calf heifers, more effective in thinner heifers. Again, the thinner animal is more sensitive to differences in nutritional requirements, okay? So this is kind of just some general, kind of a summary here. Is Larry here? Larry Cora? I know he was here. I was looking at these slides yesterday, and it started making me laugh. I like using Larry's data. I like him a lot. Really good data. I was like 2 years old when he did this. I wanted to give him a hard time about that. But so protein deficiency in young females, we get a decrease in calf birth weights, decrease in weaning weights. Protein deficient cows, again, birth weights, weaning weights. And I'm going to tell you, we've got some data at the University of Wyoming, and I'm biased, obviously, but it's pretty good data. It depends when those cows were supplemented, okay? And Rick's going to talk about that. But we can, if we made cows lose weight during the second trimester and then fed them the requirements during the third, so even if they were thin, we didn't have effect on birth weights or weaning weights or anything like that. But back to the fetal program, I'll let Rick talk about that. We could be doing other things to them. So I thought this was a pretty good quote, pretty good summary. Under practical management conditions, as I said, scientifically sometimes we can separate things out, but under practical management conditions, much of the variation in reproductive performance of beef cows is accounted for by total energy intake and body condition of the animal. So this is one of my favorite pictures. We took this up by Buffalo, Wyoming, going up. Steve Paisley and I were going up to visit somebody, and we came around the corner and saw this sign, and Steve was driving, and I looked at him and said, whoa, they knew you were coming. And but really, it's a gas line. It's a major road for gas traffic, natural gas traffic, so apparently they're pretty fed up with it. But I think it's appropriate. We need to slow down. We need to make sure that we're feeding our animals correctly. Nutrition is going to be the single factor that affects everything else you're learning at this symposium. Without proper nutrition, doesn't matter how good of a protocol you use, doesn't matter how good of a tech you hire, all of those things, without proper nutrition, it's not going to work. So with that, I appreciate your time.